Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Hello, everyone. Time for another episode of the Coach Ben Rosario Show. And this is going to be a good one today. If you are into the world of collegiate running, I am going to speak with Coach Mike Hilliard, longtime coach at the University of Southern Indiana, a very prominent Division II program. They've had a ton of success over the years. Mike is a really good coach, in my opinion, and I think by anyone's opinion. And we're going to talk a little bit of Division II versus Division I. We're going to talk about his training philosophies and just in general talk running for a few minutes here. So without further ado, let's go to Coach Mike Hilliard. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing great, Ben. Thanks for having me on today.
Oh, yeah, no problem at all. I'm excited about it. I think we're going to have a good conversation for everybody, but I just wanted to kind of start things off by letting you introduce yourself a little bit. I'm sure you can do it better than I could, and talking a little bit about your background and also, you know, about the program at Southern Indiana.
Sure. Well, I'm in my 19th season here. They tell me it's been 19 years. It doesn't quite seem like that, but you know, they say if you can find a job where you never feel like you have to go to work, then you're living the dream. So, you know, I guess I've been living the dream here for 19 years. But you know, it's a great place to coach, a great place to be a distance runner, just from an environmental standpoint. And you know, one thing that kind of sets us apart from a lot of programs is we don't have a track and field facility on our campus, but you know, I've always said if we had to trade what we do have for a track complex, I'd keep what we have. And, you know, we've got a few thousand acres of land that the campus sits on, and it's covered with trails and lots of soft surfaces to train on. So, you know, it's a great place to be. My wife and my three daughters live here in Evansville. We love it here. You know, really have never really looked to move on because I feel like, you know, and this is some things we'll talk about later on during the podcast, is there's a lot of advantages to coaching at the Division II level, and it's, you know, where I'm comfortable and where I want to be and where I want to stay.
Well, and I would take it that the program and the athletic department are behind you considering the success you guys have had.
They definitely are. And, you know, I have, I think so many coaches and especially a lot of young coaches and, you know, some guys that have worked, you know, with me here in the past and have moved on and, you know, some other coaches that I've known over the years, you know, sometimes the tendency is to dwell too much on the negatives and talk about and focus on what you don't have, you know, and, you know, we could sit here and talk about the fact that we don't have a track facility and kind of use that as a crutch. But, you know what I do when I had the only place that ever really hurts us is sometimes in the recruiting process, you know, and I'll have a kid come in the office and say, hey, where's your track? You know, and what I do every time is I pull up a picture of a dirt track in I-10 Kenya where multiple world record holders and Olympic champions and world champions go to train in Kenya. You know, and I tell them, look, this is what they have. I don't, you know, they're not complaining about what they don't have. This is what they have, and they produce world records from here. You know, so what's the point? And, you know, no, we don't have a track, but, you know, you can run fast here, you know, and if you want to do that, then we've got a pretty good place to do that. So, yeah, you know, our athletic department is very, very supportive. You know, every spring we take anywhere from 6 to 10 kids to the Mount SAC relays. We've taken several kids to Stanford over the years. And, you know, for a program that doesn't even have a track, for them to, you know, put some emphasis on it and allow us to do those things is huge, you know. And I'll be the first to tell you that if without those opportunities that our kids have, you know, we would not be where we're at right now.
Well, and you guys have produced, you know, several top 10 finishes at NCAAs and cross country and a ton of GLVC titles, I think, 10 in a row on the men's side?
Yeah.
And that's a good conference. And, you've had a ton of success. And I think that's one of the reasons I kind of wanted to talk to you is just I know that not only have you produced that success at the Division II level, you know, while the kids are there, but some of your kids have gone on and run very well after college and things like that. And I mean, I think, you know, that's one of the things I want to get kind of deep into in this podcast is the fact that the Division II level can produce Olympians. You know, it has many times and it will for many years to come. And, you know, it's just a different path. But I think it's important for kids to understand what that path is and what it entails. But also I think it's important for prospective coaches who might be listening to this podcast to understand that, you know, a person like yourself is a very good coach. Certainly you could apply for D1 jobs and go that route, but you're choosing to stay where you're at, and there's good reason for that. So, you know, maybe if we could use that as a segue to, at least in your opinion, sort of compare some of the things that the D2 level has and compare them to the D1 level.
Yeah, well, you know, I think first and foremost, I can tell you that, you know, I know a lot of coaches across the country in all divisions, and I can tell you that, you know, some of the smartest guys I know are Joe Lynn at Hillsdale, you know, is Jerry Baltus at Grand Valley State, certainly Damon Martin, you know, at Adams State,
oh, yeah,
and Gary Towne out at Chico. I mean, those guys are phenomenal coaches that could, you know, could go anywhere. But, you know, but then you look at, you know, the athletes that they produce and what a lot of those athletes have gone on to do, you know, like Scotty Bowes at Chico State. You know, and there's a lot of those kids. And I think, you know, a big part of that is the fact that a lot of these D2 kids, you know, when they come up through the high school ranks, you know, a lot of them are looking and hopeful to maybe go, you know, the Division I route. A lot of them are, and a lot of them are just late bloomers and they don't get those opportunities. The entry door, you know, into being competitive in Division II is a lot more accessible, you know, for a lot of kids. But a lot of those kids also, they come in that are late bloomers, they kind of have a chip on their shoulder, you know, because they've kind of always been the underdog, and maybe they just developed late in high school and they still feel like they have a lot left to prove, you know. And it's, you know, I think a lot of that is, you know, if you look at the history of Foot Locker finalists and what they go on to do at the collegiate level, you know, it's not a really glowing grade report, you know, and I think a big part of that is because those kids achieve so much so early on that they just get satisfied. And, you know, when a kid hasn't really achieved anything until he gets to college, then those kids are hungry, you know, and moving beyond college and then beyond, you know, to the next level and wanting to be a professional, you know, I think those kids are, it's a very pure sport at the Division II level. You know, these kids get into it for the love of the sport. It's usually not for scholarship money. And, you know, they're kids that are really self-motivated. And so that drive to continue to compete, you know, and you know, reach for goals above and beyond what they do in college you see a lot of that, you know, with kids coming out of the Division II ranks.
Well, one thing that I remember, because I was a Division II guy, I went to Truman State University in Northeast Missouri. And, you know, one of the things that I remember is, and it speaks to your point about the late bloomers, is when you're a late bloomer like that and you want to be better and you're doing everything you can to be better, but you get into college and you're a guy and you run a 1440, let's say 5K your freshman year, that's a pretty good time, but it's so far from being good and at the Division I level that you have a tendency, and a lot of kids just lose the fire, you know. They just,
you're right,
don't feel like it's realistic for them to reach the highest levels, where if you go in and run 1440 or even 1450 your freshman year at the Division II level, you can see a light at the end of the tunnel. Hey, I only have to get, you know, X amount faster and I can make it to the national meet, you know. And you get to the national meet and then next thing you know, you want to be All-American. And next thing you know, you want to be top five, you know. And those sort of things are realistic for those late bloomer kind of kids at the Division II level, whereas at the Division I level, a lot of times you get lost in the shuffle.
You're right, you know, because when that next rung on the ladder is so far out of reach, you know, that it seems unattainable, then a lot of kids do, they quit being dreamers, you know, is what happens. And when you quit dreaming and envisioning, you know, those goals and chasing after them feverishly, then you're pretty much dead and stagnant in the water at that point. And, you know, back to my point about, you know, the entryway into Division II is pretty accessible, you know, and then to be all conference, well, you know, that's definitely a attainable goal for most kids. And then to be all region and then get to a national championship meet and then compete to be an All-American, it's a lot more attainable. You know, I can tell you stories about a couple of our kids that have done some pretty big things here. One being Dustin Emmerich, who ran 28:33 for us for 10K a few years ago, and just missed qualifying for the Olympic trials. And he ran 4:31 and 9:31 out of high school. So, you know, if you look at a lot of big, you know, just say, for instance, look at some Big Ten programs in our area, those are not walk-on standards, you know.
Yep.
So he not only would it have, you know, been tough for him to go there and be competitive, he wouldn't have even had a chance to compete, period. You know, so he comes here to a Division II program. He's, you know, turns out he's a lot better than what his PRs are on paper, and he progresses pretty quickly. And, you know, before you know it, he runs 28:41 as a junior, and then 28:33 the next year as a senior. And, you know, for that young man, you know, it would have been, you know, at a lot of other places there never would have been an opportunity. Another one is Tyler Pence. Tyler was a national champion twice for us last year, indoors in the 5K, outdoors in the 10K. When he first stepped foot on our campus, it was July before his senior year of high school. He was 4'11 and weighed about 99 pounds, and he was in a boot. He had severed a tendon in his lower leg playing frisbee, hit a potted plant, it broke and severed a tendon in his lower leg. So he's 4'11, 99 pounds, in a boot, and his 2-mile PR was 10:09. You know, so he's just, at this point, he's just looking for a school that will give him an opportunity to run. So he ends up verbally committing here. He runs 9:26 the next spring after growing about 7 inches. We give him a scholarship, and, you know, and then here we are 3.5 years later. He's run 13:59 and has two national titles to his credit. And you know, he's a kid that, you know, a lot of other places, you know, there were some Division I schools that he looked at, and they just flat out, you know, he looked at and they just flat out told him that he wouldn't make the team. Johnny Guy, who's a national champion for us and was a national runner-up to Pence twice last year, he's run 28:47 on the track, and he was a late bloomer. He ran 9:29 as a junior and then made a big jump as a senior in high school. But, you know, when you get to May of your senior year, the recruiting process is over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so before May of his senior year, his PR was 9:29. You know, so there were a lot of places he visited that, you know, a few Big Ten programs in the Midwest that told him that he would, you know, he would maybe be a walk-on at best. So, you know, he went to Purdue to start off with and ended up back here with us, which we couldn't be happier about. And, you know, and then next thing you know, he's a 28:47 guy. So there's a lot of guys out there like that, you know, at the Division I level that certainly have the potential to do that. But I think sometimes being in a smaller pond and having that initial success right away, you know, kind of keeps that fire lit, you know, and then they start thinking above and beyond, what can I do, you know, other than win national titles? What, well, maybe I can qualify for the Olympic trials, you know, maybe there's more out there for me.
Yeah, well, there's no question. And we're not sitting here trying to rip the Division I level, not by any means. That's just how it is. I mean, those coaches, in many cases, they have to be like that. They have to be very selective because they're in a position
absolutely.
No question about it. And what we're saying, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is that, you know, as an athlete, as a high school athlete, or if you're a parent or a coach that's helping out a high school athlete with this process, you just need to think about everything. And you know, if you are thinking about Division II, you need to look at the program closely, because not all programs are like Southern Indiana. You know, not every coach has the drive that you have and is trying to win national titles and is producing national championships. You know, there are also Division II programs that are very complacent, you know, and that aren't trying to do what they need to do to be the very best they can be. So, you know, it's on the athlete to do their homework, but I think it's important to understand that those opportunities are there, you know, at the Division II level. One story that I know I'll tell, or that I know of that's a good one, is from Aaron Braun. I don't think he'll mind me telling this story, who went to Adams State and was many-time national champion, and now he's one of the best runners in the country and has a great chance to make the Olympic team, either in the marathon or in the 10K. He's been fifth, I think, at the trials in the 10K. When he was going through the recruiting process, there was a Division I school that I won't say the name of, but it was that sort of defeatist attitude. The coach had him into his office and told him, This was his recruiting pitch. Now, this is the Division I level. You're going to need to be getting used to getting 100th in a race. And then he went to Damon Martin's office at Adams State, and Damon took one look at him, you know, listened to Aaron, and he said, I'm going to make you a national champion. You know, well, what school are you going to go to?
Right. You know? Which door do you pick?
Yeah, I mean, that's not even a question, you know. And so you got to be careful of the of the Division I schools that have that defeatist attitude, and then you need to look for the D2 schools that have the national championship attitude, and or the Division I schools. I mean, you need to go to a place that feels right to you and feels like they're going to help you as an individual be as good as you can be.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and you know it's Braun is certainly one of my favorite Division II athletes that I've had the pleasure of watching kick the tar out of our guys for a while. But guys like him and Tyler Pinnell, who's now with Ed Zapp, those are two guys that both have very legitimate shots to make the Olympic team, and coming from the Division II ranks, it just goes to show you. And what I tell kids, when we have better recruits, that obviously every kid, when you're 18, wants to be a national champion, right? And I don't really want athletes that don't want to dream and reach for goals that might be unattainable, but at least they're dreaming and thinking big, but the reality is they're not all going to be at that level. But I always tell kids that, look, at Division II, you will always be challenged. I can remember a few years ago we were out at Stanford and we're watching Tyler Pinnell make Dathan Ritzenhine go to the well in the 10K.
Yep.
To win the race, and I'm sure he's wondering who the heck is this guy, And last year Johnny ran 28:47 at Stanford, and he's mixing it up with the best D1 guys in the country. And there's always going to be those guys, but and even Johnny, I think he was the 11th ranked collegiate 10K runner in the country last year. He couldn't even win a national title. His teammate beat him. There's not just good guys, across the country in Division II. Maybe on your own team. You're always going to be challenged. And I think a lot of kids think that if you're not running it at the Division I level, then you're kind of selling yourself short. But I tell every kid, look, if you want to run fast, there's a lot of places you can go and run fast. If you want to be able to do some of these things, then we can give you an opportunity to do these things, and it's ultimately, the decision is up to the athlete. But it's just a lot of great opportunities, and I think a perspective that a lot of kids just don't think about, at that age, and their mindset is that Division I is the highest level, so that must be. I actually had a recruit in my office last week, and she asked me about another Division I school that she was looking at, and she was comparing their girls' times and ours. And she said, if they're Division I, why are your girls running a lot faster, or do you run the same courses? And I kind of had to bite my lip. I wanted to say, a Division I mile is about 50 meters longer, but I didn't. I was nice because we want this kid here. I said, it's not about division. Look at good programs. Good programs are good programs regardless of what the label is that is slapped on that team.
Well, and I'll make one more point, and then we won't talk for an hour about D2 versus D1. But the other thing that I see happen at with the highest level kids at D2, your Pences and your Johnny Guys and your Tyler Pinnell, the guys that do make it to the top level of Division II and are winning national titles, competing for national titles, is they get there quick. Oftentimes, I mean, if they're that good, they often compete over the course of their career in several national championships, cross country, indoor, outdoor. I mean, they rack up a lot of opportunities or a lot of races where they are competing under high pressure situations for national titles, and they're learning how to race and compete. And so much of the D1 level, because it's so hard to get into the national meet at the D1 level for the top kids, so much of their experience is time trialing. It's going out to Stanford trying to get the time. It's sitting in a line trying to get the time, And then when they do get to the national meet, unless they're the very, very, very cream of the crop, the best people in the entire nation, they're not competing for the win, And they sometimes come out of college and they just don't know how to compete. And you get the D2 kids like your Aaron Braun's who won multiple national titles, and they've had all these, challenging tactical races at national championships, and they just have a little better experience, I think, in terms of racing ability.
I think that is spot on. Absolutely.
Yeah. That's just another thing that I see.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk training a little bit because people are hearing about all your success and all these sub-29 guys and national champions and great women's team as well. So just take us through a little bit about your, a little of your basic training philosophy.
Well, it starts with recruiting, and I'll tell you, first and foremost, we're not that selective. I mean, let me qualify that. We're not that selective in recruiting in terms of what your resume looks like on paper from an athletic standpoint. You know, we certainly are selective with what kinds of kids we want in the program. And, I think a lot of kids, when they're going through the recruiting process, they don't realize that it's not just a matter of, okay, this coach is bringing me in for a visit, so they really need to impress me if they want me to go to University X or Y or Z. In fact, it is absolutely the opposite. We're looking at them, we're talking to their parents, we're trying to figure out what makes this kid tick, from a morale standpoint, where is this kid on the spectrum, and all of those things. So, those are the things we look for first and foremost. I tell every recruit that comes in the office, three things. The first one is talent, and talent is negotiable. And what I mean by that is your talent level, at least what this piece of paper says it is right now, I don't care about that. If you've run fast, if you haven't yet, it doesn't really matter. But the two things you have to have is, number one, you have to love to train, because 99.9% of what you're going to do for the next 4 years is train. For every mile that you race, you're going to put in 100 of training. And that doesn't mean we run 100 miles a week or more with every kid, but you add up what you do over Christmas break, over summer, and then during cross country, you race once every 2 or 3 weeks. I mean, you're logging a lot of miles and you're not racing a lot. So if you can't stomach the training, there's not much chance you're going to be successful. The flip side of it is, if you don't hate to lose, then it doesn't matter how much you love to train. It's a love-hate relationship. You have to love to train, you have to hate to lose. So if you have those two things, then the talent part of it is negotiable. Chances are you're going to improve dramatically if you have those two criteria. So that said, as far as our training philosophy goes, I certainly am a believer, that volume is critical. However, we don't have kids go out and just jog miles to pad their logbook, so that it looks, impressive on Running to Win and they're in the top 10 on the leaderboard or whatever, and don't really care about those things. If they're not improving, then we have to take a step back and look at where we're at, in terms of volume and in terms of, intensity. So, I made an analogy to the ladder, we were talking about progressing in Division I, Training is the same way. You don't want to skip rungs on the ladder. You can't just go from 30 to 90 in 3 months and expect that it's all going to be great, and no one's going to get hurt and we're all going to run fast. And, I think a lot of coaches, a lot of successful coaches that I know in Division II, out of necessity, they had to work their tails off from a coaching perspective when they first started coaching. And that's the way my situation was. Now, Southern Indiana is a program that has a long history of success. But when I took over, the cupboard was fairly bare. I think we had 8 or 9 guys on the roster, and maybe 2 of those guys had ran under 17 minutes for 5K in high school. So everyone had to produce. We couldn't just kind of say, okay, everybody's going to run 90 miles a week and we're going to do this workout and we're going to shoot for these goal times and the strong survive and we go on. We had to get better with every athlete. And, that's something that I've never forgotten, and if it's the 24th guy on our roster or our top guy, their improvement matters a lot, because we've got 2 guys in our top 5 right now that were 1630 and 1650 5K guys in high school. And one's run 1434 on the track now, and the other is a 901 steeplechaser. And, if we're going to be in a run for a podium spot in November, then those 2 guys are going to be a big part of it. You know, and if they don't develop when they're freshmen and sophomores, you know, to be where they're at now as juniors, then we're not in the mix, you know. So volume is definitely important, but it's not the same for everyone. You know, I mean, we'll have guys in our top seven this fall that'll be at 75 to 80 miles a week at a max, and then we've got, you know, Johnny Guy and then Tyler Pence, you know, we'll have back in the spring for track, you know, and those guys have, you know, gone upwards of 105 miles a week. But it's just, it really, whatever it takes for them to be successful, you know, you have to dial in on that and focus on their strengths and what kind of what makes them tick. But, you know, certainly volume and progression of volume over a four-year period is very, very important, but we try not to skip any rungs on the ladder along the way.
Sure. And how do you, I mean, this is just my own curiosity as much as anything, because it's just a fascinating kind of puzzle to figure out from for a collegiate coach. And that's handling the three seasons, you know, the rigors of the NCAA racing season, where you have to have these guys ready to go across country, and then little Christmas break, and then they're back at it indoors, and basically no break, and then they're back at it outdoors. How do you handle the training and get these folks ready for all three seasons?
Well, you know, during indoor season, you know, certainly there's the championship element to it. So, you know, you want your kids ready to compete, you know, at the national championships, and you have conference championships and all of that as well. However, you know, there has to be a progression where this is just a step along the way, and it's not. We don't treat it as three separate seasons. We treat it as two seasons, and we have a break in between those two seasons. And indoors is just a progression that leads to hopefully bigger and better things during the outdoor season. During the indoor season, when we do have meets, you know, we're fairly selective with racing, and, you know, and that's an opportunity where, you know, our 10K type guys can race down, you know, and we can work on some things that it's hard to work on in Indiana in January and February when it's just pretty cold outside and we don't have an indoor facility. So we can do that, but, you know, those days, if it's a Friday race or a Saturday race, that's also going to be a big training day, you know. So if we're racing a mile or 3K, we finish and they're out the door and they're doing a 5 or 6 mile tempo run, you know, and that's just part of the day, you know. And we certainly don't try to cram two workouts a week and then go race on Saturday. You know, we'll do one big workout on Tuesday and then we'll go race Friday or Saturday. But as soon as we're done racing, there's a tag on and we go out and train, you know, after it's over, and, you know, and everything is pointing toward April and May, you know, when we get to, you know, those opportunities to run national qualifying marks and then the national championships after that. But, you know, at the same time, even if that, you know, is your philosophy and everything you're doing during the indoor season is building toward outdoors, there has to be a little bit of downtime in there, you know, because, I mean, they're 18, 19, 20-year-old kids, and if you're not careful as a coach, especially when you have kids that are really driven, you know, leave them to their own devices and they'll run themselves in the ground. You know, so you have to be mindful of that and pull the reins back every now and then, and not necessarily stop doing workouts and stop doing quality, but there's a lot of things that you can do year round, you know, as you know, that are the major building blocks to success, you know, long tempo runs and long runs, you know, I mean, those are things you can do year round and really not have to worry about just, you know, frying their wiring, you know, with too much anaerobic work. So we, to be honest, during the indoor season, we don't do a lot of anaerobic work other than races. You know, that's our opportunity to get some of that work in, and everything else is just building with tempo runs and long runs.
Well, let me ask you this. You've had a lot of success on the track in the 10K, and that's a tough race to figure out, because it's not so much tough to figure out how to run one good one, but I find it to be very difficult to figure out how to run a fast one at Stanford or Peyton Jordan or whatever it might be, and then come back and run well at the national meet. You see a lot of kids just fried, you know, by the time the national meet comes around, but you seem to have had success producing that fast time during the season and producing at the national meet. So how do your 10K guys and gals handle that, and what's the philosophy there?
Well, a couple of things. You know, first of all, you know, when you come off of a big effort like that, you know, you have to be very respectful of the effort that took and give your body a chance to recover and catch up. And I think that's where most people, where the fault lies often when kids don't recover and bounce off of those efforts very well is they get right back into some pretty sharp quality work too soon. You know, and you have to, you know, I always tell our kids after a big effort like that, don't worry about doing a big workout this week, because you know what? What could we ever duplicate in practice, you know, where you go out and run 69 seconds a quarter for 25 straight laps with zero rest? You know, you just did that. That's the training boost that you will get from that is pretty big if we don't squash it all by trying to come back and do something hard 4 days later. You know, you have to take some downtime and not necessarily back off of the volume, but you've got to back off and let them, you know, let their bodies catch up, you know, because it's a 25 laps on the track at Mount Sac in particular. That track is hard, you know. I mean, it can beat you up if you're not careful coming off of that. You know, and the second thing is that one big change that we've made the last couple of years when we've started to see more success on the national stage, we've had kids run fast in the past, but it hasn't always translated to running well at nationals. And last year we were first, second, and sixth on the men's side and second and sixth in the women's 10K at nationals. And you know, those kids all ran their marks at Mount Sac, and then we came back later or Stanford. Came back later and we're able to duplicate those efforts, but we do tempo runs significantly longer than we did 5 or 6 years ago. You know, it used to be that, you know, a 6 mile, 7 mile tempo run was pretty long and we never went beyond that. And, you know, now we cap those long tempo runs at 10% of their weekly volume. So our kids that are running up to 100 miles a week, you know, then they're going 10 miles on tempo runs. And that's not every week, but it's at least 2 out of every 5 weeks we're going that long on tempo runs. And I think psychologically, you know, when a kid's going out and running 51 minutes, you know, for 10 miles on and a threshold session, then a 29-minute race, it doesn't take such a psychological toll, you know, because it really doesn't seem like that big of a deal anymore. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when you run your first 5K, you know, that's so long, and then you run a 10K, and it's like, man, the 5K feels like a mile used to, you know, and from a psychological standpoint, I think it certainly makes it easier, and there's no doubt, you know, from a physiological standpoint that the adaptation from those longer efforts and just also the mental focus that it takes makes you a better 10K runner and certainly, you know, makes it easier to handle more than one of them.
Sure. Well, let's talk semantics for a little bit. So you're saying 10-mile tempo, but, of course, that's not lactate threshold pace. It's slower than that. So how are you making that calculation when you're doing a longer tempo session or steady state run or whatever you might want to call it?
Right. You know, so obviously, you know, if we're doing a 4 mile or a 5 mile or 6 mile tempo run, yeah, that pace is going to be definitely faster than it would be for a 10 mile tempo. So for us, you know, it's kind of midway between it's certainly faster than marathon pace, but it's not half marathon pace either. You know, like our top two guys last spring,
maybe,
Johnny
maybe
and
like
Tyler,
right? Two hours, maybe 2 hour race pace ish.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I mean, I think Johnny and Tyler on average they were running 50-20, 50-30, you know, for 10 mile tempo runs. But you know, of course, if you look at their track PRs, these are guys that should be able to run sub 104 for half marathon.
Yep.
So you know, you're talking about, you know, probably at least 10 seconds a mile slower, 10, 12 seconds a mile slower than what half marathon pace would be for them, you know. So, you know, typically, you know, it's, you know, somewhere in that range. With the girls, you know, we went up to 7 miles on their tempo runs because we didn't have any girls running over 70 miles a week. And, you know, you have to respect, you know, what percentage, you know, that workload is or the weekly volume when you're trying to balance it with the other, you know, quality work that you're trying to accomplish in a, you know, in a short window of time.
You know, what I find is that even though those workouts seem daunting on paper and they're scary, especially when you haven't done a lot of them yet, they're actually easier to recover from than a hard session of quarters on the track.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. You know, just because you don't have as much, you know, structural damage, you know, just the collateral damage, you know, from doing those workouts, you know, it's really, it's just, I mean, you're never really, you're never really on edge, you know, you're comfortable, you know? So it's, yeah, it's, you recover from it. You know, I'd say the recovery from those efforts is not really much different than us just doing a 20-mile long run.
No, I'd agree with that. And it's a challenge to get the athletes to understand that and buy into it. And of course, now as we get farther along and the internet continues to provide all this wonderful information, more and more kids understand and know, but there's still those kids that are coming out of high school that they just didn't have a good coach or they weren't in a good program and they just don't understand these things and they just want to be ripping repeats on the track. But it's nice, you know, that you guys have produced such good results because it's a lot easier to buy in once you see the results because they kind of speak for themselves. And once you get everybody bought in, then you're a well-oiled machine and you're rocking and rolling. But, you know, that feeling that you can get on those longer steady state tempo efforts, 10 miles, 8 to 10 miles, 12 miles, whatever it might be, that the confidence that you can get from those when you can learn how to control the body over that period of time, it's essential for sure in the 10K, but really in any race, you know. And I think you probably find that the strength stuff even helps your milers.
Oh, there's no question about that. You know, when you look at, again, those two 10K guys, Tyler and Johnny, you know, Johnny, as a freshman, his PR in the 1500 was 3:59, and he ran 3:52 last spring. You know, he's still not blazing fast by any stretch, but, you know, that was – we have not trained 1,500 meters at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it's all strength. You know, and Tyler was, I think, a 4:26 miler out of high school, and he ran 3:50 in the 1,500 last spring. You know, and that was in the middle of a buildup for nationals for 10K. You know, it's just that's just all strength. You know, and I the way I you know like to explain it to the kids is, you know, if I tell you to go out and run one quarter in 62 seconds, you know, and you're warmed up for it and you're ready, is that fast? No, coach, that's not fast. That's pretty comfortable. Okay, so you understand that the speed and the turnover is not the limiting factor here. It's your aerobic strength and your ability to maintain that now for 3 3/4 laps. And if you can do that, and that's where the strength training comes in, you know, all that aerobic strength, if you can just simply maintain that rhythm. And the same goes for cross country, you know, and our philosophy with cross country training is that, you know, if you can run at the Division II level, if you can run 5 flat pace for 10 kilometers on the grass, you're a stud. You will be an All-American. Yeah. You know, if you can run 4:50 pace for a half hour on the grass, you might be a national champion. You know, so do we have to go out there and hammer a lot of quality, or are we going to get a lot more bang for our buck keeping our focus on 18 to 20 mile long runs and 8 to 10 mile tempo runs, because that's all you need is just the strength to be able to maintain that pace for a half hour. And if you can do that, you're pretty good. And of course, you know, all the other stuff is for, you know, the championship stuff and being able to close and, you know, and then win those races when you're in those opportunities. And certainly all those other factors, you know, running mile reps at 5K pace and all that stuff, certainly I'm not acting like we don't do those things. They are certainly important. But during cross-country season, it's long run one, tempo run two, and everything else comes in order of importance when we're putting training together. Everything else comes after that.
Well, that's exactly right. So let me ask you this, cross-country, are you guys taking advantage of that acreage and doing most of these workouts on grass? How do you handle that?
You know, we do a lot of workouts on grass. We also go to a park on the other side of town that has a 1.3-mile crushed limestone loop, which is perfect for tempo runs. We on occasion, if it's wet or it's wintertime and you know, it's not real conducive to be on the grass, we have a bike path here on the campus, which you know, I'm certainly not a advocate of doing workouts on the road unless you're training for a marathon, and then you do because that's what you race on, and you have to prepare for that.
That's right.
You know, I found out the hard way several years ago. I trained for a local half marathon here, and I'd run 90% of my mileage on our trails on campus, and then I went and raced a half marathon on the roads, and then I couldn't walk for a week. you know,
right.
but we do use our bike path here on campus some, and really the advantage of it is, you know, a roadway, you know, if you're just training out on a road, those roads are made to handle the weight of semis and cars.
Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about 6 inches of asphalt, and then you're talking 1 or 2 feet of concrete below that. On, you know, a lot of city streets and roadways. So that's not very forgiving. But when you have a bike path that's just 2 or 3 inches of poured asphalt over gravel, it actually has some give to it, you know. And we've had very minimal injury issues, you know, really no more, you know, since we started using the bike path and before when we didn't use it at all. And, you know, sometimes it's good from a confidence standpoint, you know, for the kids to get out and just be able to roll. And during cross-country season, I'd much rather do that than get on the track and, you know, just bore them to tears with a bunch of left turns when, you know, and you can't get all that automatic feedback from seeing the coach every 70 seconds. You know, they need to be out there for a long period of time sometimes where they're not seeing me, because that's the way it's going to be on race day. You know, so we use that. We've got some Bermuda grass soccer fields on the campus. We've got several miles of trails, you know, that are great for recovery runs as well. And then, you know, where our campus sits, we're on the edge of the city. So literally you follow the bike path out 2 miles and you get on the roadways from there. It's farm country, you know, so there's there's gravel roads and soft surfaces to train on out there.
Yeah. Well, how about ancillary work? Are you guys getting in the weight room?
We are. We're in the weight room every Monday and Wednesday. We have a fairly set routine that Coach Landy, my assistant coach, is in charge of monitoring all that. And, you know, I certainly, you know, when you look at some of our kids, where they're at as freshmen and how their bodies develop, you know, Johnny Guy and his twin brother Josh were just complete ectomorphs, you know, when they came in. And you still look at them today, I mean, they're pretty thin, and they're 6'4", which makes them look even thinner. But you know, the way their bodies have changed and they've gotten stronger, you know, is huge. But you know, where I think the biggest benefit in the weight room is not just being stronger for race day, but being able to recover from the training, which then leads to being faster on race day. You know, I think it has more to do with just being able to train well on a regular basis than it has to do with just how it affects you on race day.
No, that makes sense. This has been great, man. Really, really good stuff. Give us a little quick rundown of where you guys are this year and what you're looking to do at the end of the year.
Yeah, well, you know, our women's squad, we lost a couple of, you know, big hitters up front to graduation last year. We had a young lady named Julia Conan who, you know, I've talked to you a little bit about her in the past. She never ran, didn't run in junior high, didn't run in high school, and then played 4 years of soccer here at the University of Southern Indiana. And I saw her out running on the bike path one day and asked a few of the kids on the team if they knew who this girl was. And one of the guys said, yeah, she's in one of my classes. I said, well, have her come by the office. So asked her a few questions. She's like, well, I've never ran a race before in my life, you know. So a year later, she competes for us. She ended up running 16:41 and 34:43 and came within a straightaway winning the national title in the 10K last spring. And so we lost Julia. We lost Skylar Hilton, who was a 16:34 5K-er. But, you know, what I always like to do at the start of every season, because, you know, we coaches, we love data, you know, we just pour over results and analyze things to death. And, you know, I always look at not just what did we lose, but, okay, what were our top 5K marks on the women's side coming into last season? Okay, and now let's compare it to what our top 5K track times are coming into this cross-country season. And even though we lost those kids up front, our 5K average of our top 7 returners was 10 seconds better than it was the year before, because all those kids, you know, from number 3 through 15 on the roster, that just continue to progress and get better. So our women are in a real good position, I think, to, you know, get to the national meet and you know, contend for a spot in the top 6 to 8. I have a sophomore named Emily Roberts who was a national qualifier in the 10K last year, and I think we'll be a national champion eventually. She certainly has the the work ethic and the drive to do that, and certainly has the talent to go along with it. On the men's side, you know, losing Pence, he's out of eligibility in cross country is certainly a big hit for us up front. However, you know, much like, you know, what I was just saying about the women, if you look at our team on paper coming into this season, we're a better team than we were last year. You know, last year at the national meet, through three runners, with three runners in the chute, we were in second. And then at 4-5, we didn't have the depth because Josh Guy was out with an injury last year and redshirted, and then Chase Broughton, who was a national qualifier in track in the spring, was having some health issues, like I had mentioned earlier to you. And so, you know, he's 100% now. Josh is running very well. And then Noah Lutz, who has progressed from, you know, being a 1640 kid in high school to mid-1430s on the track last year, is running real well at the moment. I think he ran 24:54 at Greater Louisville. And he's our true five, you know, when everyone is at their best. So, we're a team that, you know, if we have five guys have a great day, we can contend for a national title. It usually doesn't go that way, you know. it's not always that easy, you know, because there's so many. I always say, you know, you have to be good, but you have to be lucky as well, because, you know, there's just certain freak things that you can't, you know, if a kid comes down with a head cold or gets the flu or whatever, I mean, there's just so many variables that are beyond your control. So you have to be deep, you know, and we've got a lot of young kids behind that front five that will certainly be good in the future, and I think some will be pretty good pretty soon and help us later this season. But, you know, our goals on the men's side this year is certainly to get on the podium. And, you know, if you look at the landscape of Division II right now, this year in particular, if your goal is to get on the podium, then that also means your goal is to win a national championship, because I think there's about five teams right now in D2 that could win it on the right day, you know. So if you're in the mix for a podium spot, then you're almost by default, you're in the mix to win the whole thing, because I think any of those teams up or down on the right day could do it.
How, sorry, I won't keep you but a couple more minutes, but that comment just made me think of something, because I know a lot of high school coaches listen to this podcast, and I just feel like always one of the things that's really tough when you have that good of a squad is finding that balance between understanding that that's the goal, to win the national title or the state title in high school, but not dwelling on it each and every day, and trying to live in the now and make sure that you're focusing on this week of training and not constantly making a bigger deal about the national meet than it needs to be. So is that something that you've thought about this year, and how are the kids handling it?
Definitely. You know, we've talked about it very little. You know, we talked about it preseason. Yeah. You know, of course, you don't want to lose sight of those goals. So, you know, you don't want to just completely ignore it. And the kids think, oh, that must be off the table. Coach hasn't said anything about it at all. But, you know, what I try to emphasize to them is that, you know, what are the things that we can control? Well, we can control what we're doing here today. We can control how much sleep we got last night. We can control our mindset coming to practice today. We can control the effort that we put into this workout. We can be smart about what we're doing in training, and then we can go out and execute properly on race day. Those are the things that we can control. What we cannot control is what is Balthus's crew at Grand Valley going to do? What about Damon Martin's crew up at Alamosa? What about the guys out at Chico? What are they doing today? How good do you think they are? I don't care how good they are, guys. How good they are has no bearing on what you will or will not do. If we go run our best and we finish fourth or fifth or we win, that's okay. But I can guarantee you that we will not be as good as we can be if your whole focus is on, I wonder how good they are and what are they going to do. You know, those are distractions. And when you start thinking, when you take the focus away from what you're trying to do individually and collectively as a group, then you've lost it at that moment.
Yeah, well, that's great, Coach. That's a good way to end this podcast, because it was just another little gem from you. I feel like you've given us a lot over these last 45 minutes, so I really appreciate your time right in the middle of the season like this, and certainly wish you guys the best of luck, the rest of the way.
Well, thanks a lot for the opportunity, Ben, and best of luck to your crew as you build up for the trials.
Well, we'll take it. Thanks a lot. All right. See you, Coach.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ben. Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Coach Mike Hilliard from Southern Indiana. Guy is a really, really good coach. Hopefully all the coaches listening really picked up a lot from him, and hopefully the athletes as well, both on the differences between Division II and Division I, but also just, you know, from his attitude and his training philosophies and just how he talked about it and understanding the process and what it takes to be good over the long haul. I thought he had a really great philosophy, great mindset, and you can tell it's working because he's having a ton of success. And so, you know, just a great podcast. I really enjoyed it. So hopefully you guys did too, and we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.